Argument this morning is 18-1276, Spinology versus Wright Medical Technology. Yes, please. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Anthony Fitzpatrick on behalf of the appellant, Wright Medical Technology. Your Honors, the District Court abused its discretion in this case when it denied Wright Medical's motion for exceptional case and attorney's fees.
How is this different than all other cases?
It's different than all other cases when one looks at the totality of the circumstances here. First of all, it's a circumstance where the plaintiff admittedly filed its case without a full, proper pre-suit investigation. This was a situation where the parties had a prior relationship back in 2006. They had discussed a potential supply agreement whereby the plaintiff would supply the product. They couldn't reach agreement, and so Wright purchased a limited number of the product from the plaintiff, then subsequently redesigned the product, acquired it from a different manufacturer, and the plaintiff then was upset when they learned about that.
Okay, but you've read our opinion on the merits, obviously.
Yes.
And do you disagree that their position about infringement was a reasonable one?
Yes, we would submit that their position was not reasonable.
Because?
Because the claim construction position we submit was not a tenable claim construction position. It was a claim construction position that they concocted because they filed this lawsuit because they contended that we copied their product, not because they had done a proper investigation.
Did we say in the merits decision that it was unreasonable?
The merits decision does not say that it was an unreasonable claim construction position. But I would submit the district court said this claim construction is contrary to, inconsistent with the claim language and the specification.
It was wrong. But you don't get attorney's fees because someone was wrong.
No, but this is a circumstance where it's not just the claim construction.
Well, in fact, the district court didn't adopt your claim construction either. District court said you both got it wrong and adopted an entirely different construction.
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, when you look at the district court decision, what the district court said in the Markman decision was, I don't think I need to construe this body claim term at this time. However, there are several pages of discussion in the Markman decision about the claim term, and the district court specifically says, I find the claim language of the independent claim and the dependent claims illustrative. And the district court went through the dependent claims, which the plaintiff said you shouldn't do. You shouldn't look at the dependent claims.
Did the district court reject your claim construction?
The district court said at that time, I'm not going to adopt either.
Did he later adopt yours?
Subsequently, yes.
At
the summary judgment stage, she did.
Yes, but there was no definitive ruling upon which the other side could rely. I mean, part of your argument for fees deals with damages issues.
Yes.
Which were never even pressed or reached by the district court.
Correct.
So how are we to evaluate it? I mean, some district courts have observed that under this attorney's fees thing, lessly, they get rid of some cases early on summary judgment or motions to dismiss, and then they get hit with an attorney's fees request that requires essentially for them to litigate the entirety of the case from beginning to end in order to assess it. Is that your view of how the system is supposed to be working?
Well, in this case, what happened was the case did get all the way to the end. So everything was litigated. We went all the way through
Wait. The damages weren't litigated.
It was litigated in the sense that there was fact discovery about it, there was expert discovery about it, and we filed a very detailed Daubert motion challenging their damages expert.
But the court never reached it.
And we submit that's part of the issue with respect to the totality of the circumstances. Octane Fitness says the district court has to exercise its discretion looking at the totality of the circumstances. And our position here is the judge did not look at the totality of the circumstances.
The totality of the circumstances include every issue that was the subject of discovery, even though it wasn't ever resolved by the district court or even addressed by the district court.
But we would contend that has to be looked at in this situation. In this situation,
so we have to more or less adjudicate the merits of these claims, even though they were never adjudicated below, right?
Agreed. But
okay.
But the issue is they had to be litigated. We had to spend, our client spent more than $1 million litigating these issues.
Yes, but do you see the absurdity in your request and why we may be disinclined to adopt as a rule of law that the district court is hellbound to basically resolve on the merits every issue all the way through damages, even if he resolves the case at the early stage because you had to have discovery on it or you had to have expert declarations on it, or you, even though he or she never looked at any of those and it never even reached any summary judgment on damages, you nonetheless want us to instruct district courts that we know you love patent cases so much that even when you resolve them early, we're going to force you to resolve every single issue from start to finish that could have arisen in the context of assessing attorney's fees. Do you see why we may have just a tiny bit of reticence to go the way you're requesting?
I understand the concern. I truly understand the concern. I would submit that this case is unusual and, I would submit, exceptional for the following reason. This is a situation where all of this ties together. All of these circumstances tie together. You have a plaintiff that's angry. They're upset. They think we copied their product. So they look around for a cause of action to assert. Aha, we've got a patent. We'll sue them for patent infringement. They don't do the proper pre-suit analysis. Then
suppose we were to adopt a rule that says totality of the circumstances does not include resolving issues that weren't presented to the district court. Would that be an appropriate approach to this?
Perhaps, but in this case, the damages issue, for example, was presented to the district court. All of these issues were presented.
How was it presented to the district court?
Via our Daubert motion. And this ties back, because the damages they were seeking, they specifically concocted a damages theory to seek damages for the breach.
You have to use words like concocted, really. I mean, come on.
But, Your Honor,
misrepresented, concocted, you don't have to argue the case that way.
Well, if I may, Your Honor, the damages case, they were seeking lost profits damages under the patent law, but the damages they were seeking were specifically the amount that they would have made under this contract that the parties never entered into. And their damages expert admitted he didn't have a single legal authority to support
that
position.
Can I get you to go back to your pre-suit investigation? Is that okay, Judge Dyke? Okay. Pre-suit investigation issue. So I see this sprinkled throughout your gray brief, in particular on pages 5 and 6. Where in your blue brief did you make this argument? About whether or not Spinology compared the X-Ream with the any claims of the 757, which has different claims than the 188. Where did you make that argument?
I think that it's in the reply brief, principally because of the admission that the plaintiff makes in its brief. It makes an admission directly on page 4 of its brief that the allegation of infringement was based upon the fact that we had allegedly copied their product.
Well, wait a minute, but we're talking about if something comes up the first time on an appeal brief, we're reviewing the district court for an abuse of discretion. She wasn't privy or he wasn't privy to this information. So we're supposed to count what they say here is influencing our analysis of whether she abused her discretion or not?
This was also litigated and this was addressed in the briefing on the attorney's fees motion.
Well, then it should have been in blue, right?
So do you agree that nowhere in your blue brief did you raise the pre-suit investigation?
If I may, Your Honor.
Because you've led with it here today. You kind of led with this began because they didn't conduct an adequate pre-suit investigation. But I didn't see that argument in your blue brief. I saw it in your gray brief, but I didn't see it in your blue brief.
Well, so we certainly.
I'm wondering if you waived it.
I don't believe we waived it, Your
Honor. Well, show me where it is in blue.
Certainly, in our opening brief, we argued that they had a litigation position that didn't have merit. That's at page 5 of our blue brief. And I think
page 5 of your blue brief. Let's see. Phenology had a litigation position that had objectively no merit. It merits should have been evident from the outset, just found. That is an argument by you that they didn't conduct a pre-suit investigation?
Well, again...
It's not an argument by you that they didn't conduct a pre-suit investigation, no matter how liberally I interpret it. So, I mean, I'm not sure what to do with that, but to conclude you waived it.
Well, again, Your Honor, if I may, the key is, I would submit, that they admitted that they sued us because they believed that we had copied their product.
What's the matter with that? If the product is covered by the patent, you copied the product, why isn't that sufficient?
So what they say in their brief is that they relied upon the fact that their product was marked with the 188 patent number. But the 188 patent...
Well, that's a different question. That's a limitation on the damages. I'm asking you, is it in terms of pre-suit investigation, if somebody copies a patented product, why isn't that a basis for suing? I mean, what are you talking about?
But so, if I may, Your Honor, that's not... That 188 patent was not the patent that they asserted against us. That's the original patent.
They concluded that their product was covered by this patent that we're talking about here, that you copied the product, and that they sued. What's the matter with that?
Under normal circumstances, I'm not sure that there would be a problem with that. But in this situation, even their own product wasn't covered by the patent.
Why don't we hear from the other side? You're in theory, but I don't
Good afternoon, Randall Starr for Spinology. I'll start with the pre-suit due diligence because I think that's kind of an interesting issue here. I did it myself on the trial art. I determined which claims to assert, and we went through every claim limitation and did our claim construction and decided these
were... Well, you're not testifying here, right?
No, I'm just saying. I mean, because it's not an issue. Really, I don't think. I just want to let you know that it was done. I mean, this wasn't done. It wasn't done because it was necessarily a copy. It was because it was done because it met all the claim limitations.
And, well, just to be clear, they allege that you conceded that you didn't compare the X-Stream with any claim limitation of the 757 patent.
I can't imagine where that admission came from. I have no idea. It's not true. I mean, we did. I think it's because we addressed the fact that it was a copy was our primary argument in our brief, but you know, in fact, that not knowing this was an issue, we did it. You know, as part of the due diligence, and this case came down to a single claim term, came down to body, and you know, it's one of those difficult cases where body is not defined directly by the patent specification. We interpreted it to mean the shaft. District court disagreed, and we lost. And I think it's that simple. And I. You know, there was nothing extraordinary about this case. I've been doing it for 30 years. This is what happens. You lose claim construction, you lose your case. And we appealed it. We lost the appeal. I'm not sure where the exceptional part of this case is.
Well, what do you think about opposing counsel's argument that the district court and we should evaluate things that weren't actually litigated to any sort of resolution in order to figure out whether attorney's fees are warranted, like the damages theory you may or may not have presented below that the court didn't reach?
We briefed the Daubert on the damage case, but there's nothing odd about our damage theory. And I don't think, since the court didn't actually reach a conclusion about it, I don't know how we
determined. Did the court resolve the Daubert issue?
No. It came to infringement and stopped.
But as a matter of sort of law process for us, do you think we ought to instruct the district courts that they are bound to sort of resolve all of those issues they didn't resolve in order to assess whether you were making reasonable claims in them as part and parcel of a attorney's fees case?
It seemed to me to be an awful burden on the district court.
And it would seem to be quite invasive into their control over their normal trial practice.
I agree with that. Our damage theory was based on the sale we made to
I don't know that you need to go through it.
Okay. Well, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may make just one point, Your Honors. With respect to this question of what factors or issues a district court ought to consider, Octane Fitness, the standard in Octane Fitness, does specifically speak about a case that stands out from others with respect to substantive strength of a party's litigating position or the unreasonable manner in which the case was litigated. And so I understand the concern about practicality in terms of the scope of what a district court would have to consider. But the Supreme Court's decision, the holding specifically, includes consideration of whether or not the manner in which the case was litigated was reasonable or not. And we would contend, for the reasons I've explained, that really the litigation, the approach of the plaintiff in litigating this case was not reasonable. They did several things in the course of the case that we would submit were not reasonable. They misrepresented in the course of claim construction figures from the patent in an attempt to shoehorn their claim construction in. They disregarded their own documents and evidence that were inconsistent with their infringement position. They advanced these damages arguments, as I say, which were directly contrary to established law. And they made a last-ditch attempt to support their infringement position with not their engineering expert, but a physician expert, having him in his deposition on the fly do measurements to try to support their infringement position, and only withdrew those after we filed a Daubert motion against that expert. So, again, as I say, I recognize the practical concerns, but in this case, given the continuum from the filing all the way through to the end, this case was not litigated reasonably, and that's a basis for attorney's fees.
Thank you. We thank both sides. The case is submitted. That concludes our proceeding for this morning.